Hey, spooky mamas. I hope everyone has had a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and everything in between. It is 2021 and I am setting my intentions and I am manifesting. And you know what? Somehow, some way, we're gonna have a fucking great 2021. We're manifesting that shit. So let's do this together. Me and my little monsters, we went to Mississippi to visit family. It was a really short, quick 2-day trip there and back. We're back home in Tennessee now. My grandmother's up visiting us for a few more days, and it's been really good. Me and the little kids we're just trying to get back in the normal routine because the school will start back in a few more days, and we're just really sucks. This time flies by when they're off and get to spend time with us. But I really don't have much to dive into podcast wise, so we're just going to dive into the case today. So we are diving into Bruce MacArthur, the Killer Gardener of Toronto. So I'm just going to put this out there for, I have never been to Canada. I know nothing about Canada besides what I've learned in school and research on my own. I was a huge Degrassi fan as a teen. Loved it. Still pissed off about JT dying in there. That was ridiculous. I don't know what the writers were thinking about. That's a bullshit call. I had Bieber fever once or twice years ago, but that was it. Usually just what I learned in school and my own research, Canada is a very beautiful place, but myself, I have never been there. Unfortunately, our disappearances and murders are happening from the neighborhood in Toronto known as the Gay Village, Church and Wellesley. It's an LGBTQ neighborhood in Toronto. It's often called the Village or the Gayborhood or the Gay Village. But it is home to the parks and bars and restaurants. And it hosts historic community with Victorian homes from the 19th and 20th century. It holds and hosts the annual Pride in Toronto and the Dyke March and many more LGBTQ celebrations. Same-sex adult sexual behavior was decriminalized in 1969 in Toronto, and same-sex marriage was legalized in Ontario and British Columbia in the year of 2003. Now, this will come back up later, but in my research, I got this from worldpopulationreview.com. The census in 2011 showed that Ontario was made up of 71.7% of Caucasian population, and the other 28.3% belonged to various minorities. Thomas Bruce MacArthur, who went by Bruce, was born in Lindsay, Ontario on October 8, 1951. Bruce had one sister by his parents, but the parents would foster other children. It is said that there would be 6 to 10 kids at any given time in the MacArthur home, but the MacArthur family had a really good reputation in the surrounding community. He was born in a very religious home to an Irish Catholic mother and a Scottish Presbyterian father. While both parents were devout in their faiths were conflicting, which caused a lot of tension and arguments in the home. Bruce's father was the stricter parent of the two, and Bruce almost always sided with his mother when his parents would get in arguments, and his father had an issue with that. Also, there were arguments between Bruce and his father because even at a young age, he was not the most roughest and toughest of little boys. He was not the most masculine little boy. He did have feminine features, and it is thought that maybe his dad picked up on him being homosexual at a young age. So it was stated he thought that was an issue later in life. When Bruce was attending school at Fenelon Falls Secondary School, he met Janice Campbell. They started to date, and they both graduated high school together in the 1970s. At 23 years old, Bruce had graduated in a business program, and he had married Janice. He began working for Eaton's department store as a buyer's assistant in downtown Toronto in 1973. And the downtown Toronto area he was working at was not far from the Gay Village. Bruce's mother died in 1978 from cancer, and his father died in 1981. In 1979, Bruce and his wife Janice moved to Oshawa, and by 1981, Bruce and Janice had welcomed 2 children, one daughter named Melanie and one son named Tom. By 1986, Bruce became extremely involved in church, trying to hide his homosexuality and not being true to himself. In the 90s, He came multiple sexual affairs with the men. He finally admitted in 1992 to Janice that he was a homosexual man, but they did continue to live together for a year later. In 1997, Bruce separated from Janice and moved to Toronto. Bruce started visiting the gay bars on Church and Wellesley in Toronto. Bruce entered into a 4-year relationship with another man, and this was why he was separated from his wife. In 2001, his divorce was being finalized, and him and his boyfriend at that time broke up. Also in 2001, Bruce was seeing a shrink and was prescribed Prozac, and then he started to work in the landscaping business for himself. This is where Bruce started his nefarious shit, y'all. Bruce started chatting with men online, and he met a sex worker online, and they agreed to meet up for consensual sex. After this encounter, the sex worker invited Bruce over on Halloween of 2001. Once in the home, Bruce attacked the man with an iron pipe from behind. Somehow, he was able to call 911 and receive treatment for his multiple injuries. He had several injuries to his body, as well he had to have stitches on his fingers and toes, I had read. And then also, he had to see a therapist for weeks afterwards due to the trauma he had from the attack. Bruce turned himself in to the police, but stated he didn't remember the attack or even have a motive to know why he did it. He pleaded guilty on April the 11th of 2003, and he was handed a conditional sentence of 729 days in jail. Unfortunately, Bruce avoided jail time. The man Bruce attacked didn't provide a victim impact statement due to his traumatic response, and the Crown attorney had reservations about the events due to Bruce's medication intake. Bruce was currently, at the time of the attack, on an anti-seizure medication along with taking amyl nitrate. So apparently Bruce was taking this anti-seizure medication along with amyl nitrate, and the court thought there could have been a crazy counter-reaction between the two, and this led to his actions on Halloween night. The judge at that time didn't think he would be a repeat offender. So unfortunately, if he would have been stopped here at some point, maybe we wouldn't be talking about the murders in the future. But Bruce ended up only being on house arrest for 1 year, along with a 6-month curfew and 3 years probation. He was banned from entering or going to businesses and establishments in church in Wellesley's Gays Village unless it was a work or medical issue. He had to stay away 33 feet or 10 meters away from his victim, whether it was the victim itself, his home, or his workplace. He could not be nowhere near him. He couldn't spend time with any male prostitutes or any sex workers, and he could not possess firearms for 10 years and couldn't consume drugs unless prescribed by a medical physician. He had to submit his DNA into a database and attend counseling and anger management. Here's the thing. He can't possess firearms for 10 years. He can't consume drugs unless it's prescribed. Unless it's reported by someone who was attacked or seen him partaken, how would the police know? They wouldn't. So this is crazy. And honestly, who's going to follow up with this? The law systems, no matter what country, are always bombarded and overworked. So who would follow up with anything like this? They wouldn't. It's crazy. Unfortunately, in 2014, Bruce was granted a pardon, and most of his criminal record from the attack in 2001 was expunged, which I call bullshit, but you know. Meanwhile, back in 2002, Bruce was back on the internet, and he was joining dating websites. He had accounts with Recon, Silver Daddies, Grindr, Bear441, Scruff, Growler, and more. He would note that some of his interests were BDSM and submissive men. By 2013, Bruce had become a full-blown self-employed landscaper. Bruce worked out of a van with his tools, and it was stated he always was accompanied by an older white man who he was believed to have been with romantically, and he would always have hired day laborers, usually someone of Southeast Asian or Middle Eastern descent. And listen to this weird shit. During his off seasons from landscaping, he would play Santa at his local mall. In November 2012, Toronto Police Service launched a task force named Project Houston. The reason the task force was put together to begin with is because there was an online report on a website. It was a cannibal website called Zambian Meat. A man posted he had killed and eaten a man from Toronto. And at this time, there was a missing man who went missing on September 6th of 2010. And I do apologize if I mess this up, and I know I will. Skandaraj Navartnam. And he was missing since September the 6th of 2010. And the Toronto Police Service believed he had been murdered, but no body was found. They had no body and they had no leads. By June of 2013, the Toronto Police Service had linked two more missing men to Navartman's disappearance. All three men had disappeared from the Toronto's gay village and were all middle-aged immigrants. An anonymous call came into TPS claiming Bruce MacArthur knew all of the victims and could have possibly dated some of the victims. On November the 11th of 2013, Bruce was interviewed by TPS. He stated he met Navartum at a gay bar but was never in a relationship with him. He also said of the other missing man, Majid Kahan, that they had a sexual relationship at one point, but they broke it off. And at one point, he had employed Majid with him. Project Houston and TPS had no evidence linking Bruce to the disappearances and no reason to suspect him at that time, so he was not a person of interest or a suspect in any of these disappearances. June 26, 2017, Andrew Kissman disappeared. He was reported missing on June 28th of 2017, just 2 days later, by his friends after no one had heard from him in those 2 days. Police found his cell phone had been turned off since the 26th once they pulled his phone records. By July of 2017, Salim Ihsan, and I do apologize if I said that wrong, was missing, and Task Force Project Prism was created. At this point, they were seeing if any of the men from Project Houston and Project Prism was related. Also at this time, a female was found dead by her mother after she was reported missing a few days prior by the name of Tess Ritchie, and also a transgender woman. Her name was Alora Wells. She was also murdered. This time, the LGBTQ community of Toronto was rightfully scared, and they were afraid there was a serial killer hunting people of their community. At that time, TPS was trying to let them know they had no reason to be afraid or scared, but unfortunately they did. Project Prism was led by Detective Sergeant Michael Richmond and Detective Sergeant Hank Itzignia. If I said that wrong, I do apologize. They had been on Project Prism for 6 months. According to court statements, police found Bruce written on Andrew Kinsman's calendar for the date of June 26th, the day of his disappearance. There was also security footage outside of Andrew's home showing a person matching Bruce's appearance, because unfortunately it was not as crystal clear, the security footage. So the appearances matched, but they didn't have like dead proof of him on camera. The video showed a red 2004 Dodge Caravan, but it didn't show a license plate. Bruce had a red Caravan, but again, there was no license plates to definite pointing out. In the records for Toronto, there was over 6,000 red 2004 Dodge Caravans. Out of the 6,000, 5 were registered to a man named Bruce. Out of those 5 was Bruce MacArthur. On September 2017, police obtained tracking warrants for Bruce's vehicles and phones. On October the 3rd, the van was searched and tested. Andrew Kingsman's blood was identified in the van. And then later also, they found Salim Ihsan's blood as well. These findings allowed detectives to obtain a warrant for MacArthur's residence. The police secretly entered into Bruce's home and cloned his computer's hard drive. Unfortunately, this did take time to run that through that analysis and get deleted files and everything else. January 2008, detectives state they were surveilling Bruce's around the clock. On January 17th, 2018, they found pictures that was going through forensic analysis of his victim's post-mortem. The officers who were surveilling him were ordered to arrest Bruce on site if he was seen alone with anyone. After they were notified of the photos, their surveilling officers entered the home after they seen a young man enter his apartment. When the two police officers entered the apartment, they found the man tied up in Bruce's bed. They arrested Bruce MacArthur on the spot, and then the victims told the officers he had moved to Canada 5 years prior with his wife and children. He was not out and openly gay, but he had met Bruce on the dating app Growler. They had met up and had consensual sex multiple times before, and he showed up this time and was attacked by Bruce. January 18th, officers had warrants to search 5 properties Bruce MacArthur was associated with. The residents of these properties would not be allowed to be on their properties while the searches were being conducted. The officers brought in cadaver dogs to search the properties. Cadaver dogs took an interest in a large planter box on one of the properties, and it was taken to the coroner's office. On January 29th, 2018, TPS announced skeletal remains of 3 people were found in a planter's box. On February 8th, 2018, TPS announced remains of 3 more people were discovered, and one of the remains did later identify as Andrew Kinsman. It took 4 months for investigators to search Bruce's entire apartment. On April 16, 2018, he was charged with his 8th count of first-degree murder. In 2018, there was a publication ban ordered on court proceedings, so court reportings have been very limited as what is leaked to the media. Bruce was being held at Toronto South Detention Center on March 19, 2018. It was reported that he was on a constant suicide watch. On January 29th, 2019, Bruce pleaded guilty on all 8 first-degree murders. On February the 8th, 2019, Justice McMahon sentenced Bruce MacArthur to life imprisonment. He does unfortunately have the chance of parole after 25 years. Bruce didn't speak at his trial, nor was the motive ever given for his crimes. Judge McMahon described the crimes as pure evil and stated Bruce showed no evidence of remorse. Bruce can apply for parole in 2044 when he is 91 years old. Although it is stated that today he has type 2 diabetes and is significantly overweight. But you know, karma is a bitch, so just a little happy for us. In April of 2019, Bruce was assaulted by another inmate. Now, I could not find actual extensive descriptions of his injuries due to HIPAA, but his injuries were serious enough to where he did have to be rushed and medically seen at a hospital. Unfortunately, today he is still currently alive and is at Millhaven Institution Penitentiary in Canada, and Paul Bernardo is in prison there as well, so hopefully those assholes get beat up every day. It was stated at one point that the seriousness of these killings, the way they were done, these killings were done from 2010 to 2017. So over this year of span, these men went missing, and later to come to find out, this landscaper was burying remains and pieces of his victims in his customers' yards and their pottery plants. And it was stated that they thought this was the works of a professional serial killer at one point. And they are now currently looking into cold cases from the early 70s because him and Janice had just moved to the area at that point, or he was working in downtown Toronto. From what I could find in my research, at this time they have not linked him to any of the cold cases from the early 70s, but they are still investigating. And then also, there was issues and accusations of racism on behalf of the Toronto Police Service because all of the victims were immigrants. All of the victims but one were immigrants. Only one of the victims was a Caucasian male. And then all of the victims were in the LGBTQ community, regardless if their personal loved ones knew it or not. So there was a lot of backlash that the TPS was not taking the threats and missing seriously until, unfortunately, the last victim came up missing, which was Andrew Kinsman, the Caucasian male. And again, that's why I was saying over 71% of the population during these years are Caucasian, and they thought there were issues as far as the police taking this serious due to the race into the LGBT community. So always, always love your neighbor, love your family member. I don't care about your religion, do you? I don't care about your personal thoughts and politics, do you? But you always love your neighbor, and you loved your children, and you love your friends and family. You welcome with them with open arms, and you love them regardless. Don't be an asshole. We've talked about the shitty person that did all these horrible crimes. So I want to take a moment to talk about the victims. And again, I know some of these names I will mispronounce so horribly. Please don't come after me. I do not mean to offend anyone, but I do think we should talk about them. Skandaraj Nartman, he moved to Toronto from Sri Lanka, and he dated Bruce at one point, even though Bruce denied it in his initial interview. They knew each other from the early 2000s, and he was described as a social and jovial and always ready to help his friends. Abdul Bazaar, he was 42 years old. He was married and a father to two. He did live a double life. He lived a life with at home with his wife and children, and then he had a social life in the gay village. His disappearance escaped the constant eye because no one knew his ties to the LGBT community or to even look that way. Majid Kahan, he was 58. He was an Afghan immigrant, and he too lived a double life. He had a family at home, and he was secretly renting an apartment in the village as well. Sharush Mohammadi, he's 50. He was a refugee from Iran. Krishna Kumar, he was 37. He was from Sri Lanka, and he was seeking asylum. He was denied and was to be deported back to Sri Lanka. He was never reported missing because his friends and family that he came to Canada to see and live with, they thought he fled or was in hiding, that way he couldn't be deported. So no one reported him missing to the authorities out of fear of getting in trouble, and they didn't want him in trouble as well. Dean Lisowick. Dean struggled with mental illness, and this led to him being homeless later in life. He often stayed in homeless shelters and was a sex worker for income. He was described as a loving and caring man. Selim Esin, 44-year-old male, he was an immigrant from Turkey. In a family statement by his brother, it was stated he was a very friendly, kind-hearted, open, independent mind, and curious, passionate about learning new things, gardening, exploring new places, and meeting new people. And the last, Andrew Kinsman, 49 years old, he was described as an extraordinary, quirky, and caring individual. He was active in Toronto's LGBT community, and everybody loved him. This man, Bruce MacArthur, preyed on people who knew, who was cut off from the rest of the world, that came to Canada in search for a better life, fleeing whatever horrible they had to flee from their home country. He knew these men lived a different life and couldn't be open like the rest of the world. And he took advantage of that. He preyed on these men, and he murdered these men. And he is an evil man. I hope he sits in prison. I hope he's assaulted over and over again. And I hope he lives out the last of his remaining days miserable with his diabetes and getting his ass beat by inmates. That is what I manifest for Bruce MacArthur for 2021. All right, guys. If you have any comments, anything you want to hear about in any future cases or any shows, DM me on Instagram at Spooky Mama Podcast. I hope you all have an awesome week, and I will be seeing you guys later. Stay spooky, babies.